나자이다나브라마니다나야야데이다고다나시바사디
The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jaya Pataka Swami on April 27, 1986 in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 17, Verse 24.
Tapasu Changdoya Satyam Iti Pada Krite Kritaha Adharmang Sai Trayo Bhagna Smaya Sangamadaistava Tapasu Changdoya Satyam Iti Pada Krite Kritaha Adharmang Sai Trayo Bhagna Smaya Sangamadaistava Translation. By His Divine Grace, Srila Boichan Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, in the age of Satya, truthfulness, your four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. But it appears that three of your legs are broken due to rampant irreligion in the form of pride, lust for women, and intoxication. Translation with repetition. In the age of Satya, truthfulness, your four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. But it appears that the three of you, that three of your legs are broken due to rampant irreligion in the form of pride, lust for women, and intoxication. Here, who speaks English? Raise your left hand. Okay, for those that don't, let's see, who can who knows who's bilingual here? Who knows Tamil and English? Anika Sringer. You tell those people who don't know English to sit next to you. Other people that know English, you shift aside. And then as I'm speaking, you just... Men. Then you just give the translation in running way. Is there any women that doesn't know English? Everyone seemed to raise their hand. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The deluding energy or material nature can act upon the living beings proportionately in terms of the living beings falling prey to the deluding attraction of Maya. Moths are captivated by the glaring brightness of light, and thus they become prey to the fire. Similarly, the deluding energy is always captivating the conditioned souls to become prey to the fire of delusion. And the Vedic scriptures warn the conditioned souls not to become prey to delusion, but to get rid of it. The Vedas warn us to not go to the darkness of ignorance, but to the progressive path of light. The Lord Himself also warns that the deluding power of material energy is too powerful to overcome. But one who completely surrenders unto the Lord, unto the lotus feet of the Lord, can easily do so. But to surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord is also not very easy. Such surrender is possible by persons of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. These four principles of advanced civilization were remarkable features in the age of Satya. In that age, every human being was practically a qualified Brahmana of the highest order. And in the social orders of life, they were all Paramahamsas, or the topmost in the renounced order. By cultural standing, the human beings were not at all subjected to the deluding energy. Such strong men of character were competent enough to get away from the clutches of Maya. But gradually, as the basic principles of the Brahminical culture, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, became curtailed by a proportionate development of pride, attachment to for women, and intoxication, the path of salvation, or the path of the transcendental bliss, retreated far, far away from human society. With the progression of the age of Kali, people are becoming very proud and attached to women and intoxication. By the influence of the age of Kali, even a pauper is proud of his penny. The women are always dressed in an overly attractive fashion to victimize the minds of men. And the man is addicted to drinking wine, smoking, drinking tea, and chewing tobacco, etc. All these habits, or so-called advancement of civilization, are the root causes of irreligiosity. And therefore it is not possible to check corruption, bribery, and nepotism. Man cannot check all these evils simply by statutory acts and police vigilance. But he can cure the disease of the mind by the proper medicine, namely advocating the principles of Brahminical culture, or the principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. Modern civilization and economic development are creating a new situation of poverty and scarcity, with the result of blackmailing the consumers' commodities. If the leaders and the rich men of the society spend 50% of their accumulated wealth mercifully for the misled mass of people and educate them in God consciousness, the knowledge of Bhagavatam, certainly the age of Kali, will be defeated in its attempt to entrap the conditioned souls. We must always remember that false pride, or too high an estimation of one's own values of life, undue attachment to women, or association with them, and intoxication will divert human civilization from the path of peace, however much the people clamor for peace in the world. The preaching of the Bhagavatam principles will automatically render all men austere, clean both inside and outside, merciful to the suffering, and truthful in daily behavior. That is the way of correcting the flaws of human society, which are very prominently exhibited at the present moment. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami purports to the text 24, chapter 17, canto 1 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the chapter entitled Punishment and Reward of Kali. Om Tat Sat. Here, the King Parikshit Maharaj, he's talking to the bull of religiosity. Now, previously, the bull was standing on four legs, naturally, but he could see that three of the legs had been broken. This is a very important verse because it gives us an understanding of what is the age of Kali. At the age of Kali, three legs of religiosity are crippled. Cleanliness, austerity, mercy. Only truthfulness in some percentage remains as a principle that people try to maintain. We can see that in the modern world, people think that free love, open sex life, intoxication, all these things they consider to be quite meat-eating, quite unobjectionable. Nobody thinks that these things are wrong in the general modern society. But they complain if a leader misrepresents the truth to his followers. In America, when Nixon lied, he was impeached. When one minister in England didn't tell the truth and he was caught, he had to resign. So still this idea that a person should be truthful is something which society accepts. In principle, in practice, that's something else. But they don't even accept the principle that you should not eat meat or you should not be able to mix freely with women or that you should not take intoxication. Simply the degree is there. Intoxication is accepted, but whiskey is okay, heroin is not. Or sex is alright, but then they have certain limitations that they want in some places they have none. So, in this way, these principles give us an idea of how the age of Kali is actually progressing. We can see that although this was written 5,000 years ago, that it's evident today. There's so many examples how this is right on. This is giving the exact explanation of our situation today. Prabhupada has very clearly said that all this propaganda about world peace is a futile attempt. So long as people are addicted to these kind of materialistic activities, unless the principles of religion are established, unless the principles of irreligion are eradicated from society, the call for peace is just so much hot air. Ultimately speaking, nothing is going to come of it. What's needed is that these principles of Brahminical culture, austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, should be established. Unfortunately, just the opposite is evident. Development of pride. Actually, people are so proud. Although people are going to die any minute, yet they're very proud of their scientific advancement. Prabhupada repeatedly advised us how they have not been able to solve the real problems of life: birth, death, old age, and disease. Which is very obvious. Yet they are so proud. They're so proud of their so-called advancement. That pride manifests in so many ways. Just like a person is proud of his sectarian religion. Their pride in their being in their sectarian religion is more than actually any real love for God. So as a result, people are killing each other over what their religion is. They're very proud of their religion, but they don't even know what the religion teachings are in most cases. Nor are they interested to know. They're simply absorbed in pride. Since I'm the greatest person and I belong to this religion, this must be the greatest religion. It's actually what it comes down to. So if somebody else is the enemy of my religion, he's my enemy, therefore he should be killed. And this way people are manipulated. So we have Muslims against Christians in Lebanon, and we have Hindus against Buddhists in Sri Lanka, Hindus against Muslim in India, Sikhs against Hindus against in India, then Protestants against Catholics in Ireland, and so on and so forth. So this false pride, whereby people don't actually understand what are the real principles of religion, what is the actual situation of another person, where they're so self-centered that they simply are concerned with their own pride. When you read up newspapers, the leader of Libya and leader of America, how they're calling each other different things. One thing that's common is definitely there's a tremendous amount of pride. Who's right or who's wrong is another thing. To what degree? When no matter what they do, they think that what they're doing is right. Even when they're dead wrong, they think they're right. Unless there's some humility, unless there's some other consideration, then how can you create any kind of a unification, any kind of a peace? So where to get these good qualities? How to curtail such a thing as pride? Just talking about it, don't be proud. won't go very far. What needs to be established is that person, if they're established in religious principles, automatically false pride reduces. If they're established in austerity, cleanliness, truthfulness, and mercy, then they'll be detached from false pride, over-attachment to women, and to intoxication. Therefore, the Krishna conscious movement is promoting these religious principles, and the preachers of the Krishna conscious movement, they have to themselves be very careful to adopt and emulate these brahminical principles, to show them as an example for the rest of society. If a preacher doesn't show good qualities, or rather shows bad qualities, then people will not take seriously what the preacher is saying. Sadhana Sannyasi, Lord Chaitanya said, even a small mistake shows up like a black spot on a white sheet. Prabhupada used the example. So if you have a black wall, you don't see a black spot or a brown spot. But in the white wall, if somebody just throws some ink there on that wall, everyone will see, well, there's a black spot on the white wall. So even a small defect in a sadhu or in a preacher becomes very pronounced. So we have to be very careful, so long as we want to propagate Krishna consciousness, not to allow any defect to become manifested. The preacher is virtually crippled by this type of defect when they come out. Prabhupada used the word that the human society is going away from the path of salvation or the path of transcendental bliss. Or rather, this path of salvation and transcendental bliss has retreated far away from human society. The way to go back to Godhead gradually goes further away from us when we take on all these sinful habits. Prabhupada says here, if the rich people of the world spend 50% of their income on spreading God consciousness, then the whole mass of people being engaged in God consciousness, then the world could become very peaceful. Actually, people, if they spend their income, as it mentions here, 50% for propagating God consciousness, would be such a wonderful effect. Prabhupada used to say that there was one Mayavadi guru, he would never touch money. He gave lecture that when money comes towards me, my hand goes away. You put money, it just goes away. But someone give money, your hand go. Of course, his secretary would take the money. Didn't go away from his secretary's hand, but he would, I can't touch money. Just signs checks. Or a secretary signs checks. Pretty rich sadhu. People in India are attracted by these gimmicks, so they give a lot of money to someone who doesn't touch money. Prabhupada one time gave lecture that if money comes to me, I'll take it with two hands. Give it to Krishna. We're not shy to ask or to take money because we're using it for Krishna's devotional service. It's not material, it's spiritual. Whatever money Srila Prabhupada got, even he spent it before he got it. In the Bombay project, when he put the down payment for the land and said he was going to buy the land of 14 lakhs, he didn't have any money. The secretary said, Prabhupada, that you don't have any money, how is it you're buying the land? He said, Krishna will provide. So he was very bold in this way. And somehow or another then he pushed his disciples and pushed the devotees to raise fund when there was some important project. This is how things got done so quickly. He used to say that if a Brahmin gets $1 million, the next day again he'll be a beggar. He'll spend it on Krishna. So in this way, the devotees, he enjoined them that whatever you get, you spend it on Krishna as quickly as possible. We don't want to accumulate wealth. As soon as we get it, we want to spend it on Krishna conscious purposes. So in this way, there's actually so much that needs to be done. Publishing books, distributing prasadam, building spiritual centers. So many movies can be made on Krishna consciousness. So many books can be published. So many ways that people can be educated. There's a tremendous need in society. But generally what happens is one man in India, he told me how, he's an industrialist, he said, I'm going to give all my money to my children, then I'm going to come and become a devotee. I said, this is Prabhupada, he advised against this. If you give all your money to your family, then you come empty-handed to Krishna. And you work hard your whole life, and then your energy, you don't give anything to Krishna. This is not very considerate. You're going to Krishna, please give me your mercy, but you're not giving any of your energy to Krishna. A person's heart is where his money goes. So I explained that Rupa Goswami, he showed the perfect example by giving 50% from his accumulated wealth to the service of Guru and Vaishnavas for spreading Krishna consciousness. The other 50% he kept, 25% for emergency and 25% he spent on his family. This is a proper way that one should divide wealth if they have it accumulated. Prabhupada used to criticize it. Don't come to Krishna empty-handed if giving away all your money for your family members and then giving nothing to Krishna. Rupa Goswami, the six Goswamis. In fact, if it wasn't for Rupa Goswami's keeping 25% away, then how would Sanatana Goswami have been saved? After Rupa Goswami left, then Sanatana Goswami started studying the Bhagavatam on the plea of being sick. The Nawab Hussein Shah burst in, sent his physician, found nothing was wrong. One day he suddenly appeared in his house, saw there Sanatana Goswami was reading the Bhagavatam with his brahmanas. Sanatana Goswami stood up to receive the emperor. The emperor said, what are you doing here? Why aren't you coming to the court and attending your duties? You're the prime minister. He said, well, I'm not feeling any taste for this anymore. I'd like to be relieved. The emperor became very angry that I want to go out and attack various kingdoms, expand my empire. I need you to manage the kingdom on my behalf so I can go out and do my campaigns. And Sanatana Goswami said that I'm not, don't want to do it anymore. So then King Bhai became so angry that he arrested Sanatana Goswami so that he wouldn't escape. Then he went out on his campaigns. So, Sanatana couldn't get out of the prison, but he bribed the gatekeeper, the jailer. First he praised him, Ila illa mahalma rasul illaha, that you are such a very great, devoted person, you are very wonderful, and I'm going to leave for a religious purpose. So you're a very religious man. So you should kindly let me free. He said, how can I let you free? If I let you free, I'll be killed by the king. He said, I'll give you 5,000 gold coins on top of it. No, but how can I do that? It's very dangerous for me. He said, no. You can just say that I died. I'll never show my face up here again. It's very difficult for me. I'll give you 10,000 gold coins. Well, for the service of God, I can do it. So, because of keeping that little emergency fund, because the jailer was very religious, he accepted a donation of 10,000 gold coins, and somehow Sanatan Goswami was able to escape. So, in this way, we can see that practical value of following Rupa Goswami's system. Somehow people have to be preached this. It's actually their duty to give 50%. It's not that the devotees should come pestering grihasthas, please give your 50%, please give a donation. The grihastha should be thinking that this money is liquid karma. Whatever money that I have over above what I need for my food, my clothing, my housing, my basic expense, whatever else I have, if I don't give it to Krishna, at least 50%, then I'm simply holding karma. This money is simply going to cause me repeated birth and death. So I have to use it for Krishna as far as possible. At least 50%. Of course, if someone, the Bhagavatam says that we are allowed to work for having a healthy body, for being healthy, for having clothes, shelter. So, this is a subject of debate, what to do if a person's income is such that 50% doesn't pay for the food, doesn't pay for the clothing. In which case, one would have to get some special dispensation from the guru. What to do in such a case? Of course, Kolavecha Sridhar, he was a fanatic, you could say, or he was very dedicated to this principle. He took an oath that he'll give 50%, a vow, 50% of his income he'll spend on Ganges puja. So what? All he was doing was selling bananas, banana leaves, banana flowers in Bengal at that time of Navadvip, the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was hardly making any income. Because selling bananas in Navadvip is like trying to sell palm oil in Malaysia. Everybody, palm oil is everywhere. We don't need to. We're trying to sell rubber, latex, here. Everywhere it's growing. So there, Bengal, everywhere, every house has got bananas. It's only a rare person that wants extra banana. So somehow or another he was getting some income. Whatever income he'd get, immediately he'd take 50% and spend it on incense, flour. Whatever he'd get, he would spend that on ingredients and go and worship the Ganges. Then he'd take the rest and he would spend. Of course, he was self-employed. He had his own land. And he grew his own bananas. And he sold them. So then, but actually he was very poor. His clothes were ripped. His house had holes in it. So people used to criticize him. They used to say that why you're living like this? Listen, proper business sense that you should stop giving 50% to the Ganges, invest your capital for 1 year, build up your capital, have a good basis for that, then you spend it. Then you, after 1 year is over, you give 50%, it'll have a bigger capital, so you'll have more income. In this way, you can give more to Krishna. He responded that if I start that now, then what if I stop giving 50% now, what is the guarantee that after 1 year I'll start again? Once I get in the habit of not giving, then there'll always be an excuse to bring up a little more capital, build up a little more wealth, build this, build that. And this way then, Maya could catch me. But now I'm very safe, I'm giving 50%, somehow and other things are going on, I'm not going to change. But your holes are ripped, my man! Don't you see, you've got holes in your cloth! He said it's quite cool in the hot weather. After all, my body is covered. What does it matter if there's a little ventilation? But you've got a hole in your roof. Well, we have to have the light in come in somewhere. Little light, fresh breeze, very healthy. Now they say, you're crazy. And they'd all go off thinking that Kolavich Sridhar is totally mad. Wasting his good time and energy worshipping the Ganges. Every night, Kolavich Sridhar would chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Long into the night he'd chant kirtan. So all the materialistic neighbors, they'd start to complain. Why is he howling all night? Nobody can get any sleep. Someone said, it's because he's so hungry he can't sleep himself. Because he's hungry, he's just howling in the night. Like this. All the people are so nasty, they're just criticizing him. But then he had so many intimate pastimes with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come as Nirmay Pandit and take bananas only from him. Although sometimes he would do a change up on Lord Chaitanya, on Kolavacha Sridhar, he would give, say, well, take the bananas and give short change. Kolavacha Sridhar would say, hey, you're not giving the right amount. Just grab back the bananas. Give them back. Take your money. You pay the right amount or don't take them at all. Then Nimai Pandit would say, grab the bananas back again. So you're accusing a brahmana. You're accusing me of cheating. You think I don't have bananas in my house? You think I need your charity? Why are you accusing me like this? You're offending the brahmanas. And Kolavacha Sridhar would get, you're charging double, that's why. Take this. Don't cheat anymore. Go on. But actually he'd only charge the right price. This way they're having so many different arguments and things. Actually, Kolavacha Sridhar's heart would melt every time he'd see Lord Chaitanya. And Chaitanya knew he was his pure devotee, so he just tease him in this way. Actually, Kolavacha Sridhar was a very honest businessman. He just charged exactly the market rate. He'd say, no, you test the market, you can buy wherever you like, you won't get any cheaper than I'm selling. This is the actual price. But still, Lord Chaitanya would buy only from him, somehow or another. So in this way, even what normally profit he'd make, Lord Chaitanya cut into that, already taking his percents. He was giving more than 50%. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would personally come as Nimai Pandit and take a little tax by taking some of the bananas and giving less money. So, of course, when Lord Chaitanya gave his mercy to Kolavacha Sridhar, gave him pure love for Godhead, after the Chankazi Samadhi, after Chankazi was approached and defeated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, convinced, he gave his order that no one will disturb the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went with his follower and they took rest at the house of Kolavacha Sridhar. So after all the processions and talking and kirtan, Lord Chaitanya was very thirsty. So he said, give me some water. The Kolavacha Sridhar had no brass. He was very poor. He only had a broken steel cup. And just a clay pot of water. The Lord Chaitanya saw his broken steel cast iron mug. He went over and picked it up and poured himself a glass of water. While Kolavich's Sridhar had gone out to try to get another glass for him, because his wasn't, then he saw what Lord Chaitanya is doing, he ran back, said, no, this is not fit for you, it's not suitable. I'm getting you another glass. Don't take from that. He was so excited, he even went to take it from Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya held him back, drank the water, said, this is the sweetest water. Lord Chaitanya even used this broken vessel of his devotee, giving a special mercy to Kolavecha Sridhar. Sometimes if a devotee takes some austerity on behalf of the Lord never forgets that devotee. The devotee becomes very dear to him. So, just that there are various devotees who are, it's like Sanatana Goswami was a symbol of humility. Das Raghunath was a symbol of austerity. Kolavecha Sridhar is practically the top example of Jukta Vairagya as an independent grihastha who's making his living for giving the principle of giving 50%. Although Rupa Goswami showed that practically. But he was, after all, the finance minister. When he divided his wealth up, he divided it up into boatloads of gold. 4 boatloads. 1 boatload for his family, 1 boatload, 2 boatloads for the Brahmins and Vaishnavas and Guru. Boatloads of gold. In those days, even a boatload of gold today is quite valuable. Not to speak of then. So he was fabulously wealthy. Someone say, yes, if you give me billions of dollars, I'll also give 50%, keep 50%. Someone may say that. So in the other extreme we have, which is legitimate to do, another example we have, Kolavecha Sridhar, who practically didn't even have enough, just barely to live. Not adequately living. But he still maintained that principle. So like this we find in Lord Chaitanya's devotees that they live very strictly by principles. The principles of austerity, truthfulness, cleanliness, and mercy. That they very strictly avoid pride, attachment to sense gratification, intoxication. Therefore we should try to follow in the footsteps of those great devotees. The people will know the modern day devotees of Lord Chaitanya to have these type of qualities. Prabhupada wanted that. Doesn't want that devotees should be known by any negative connotation. Falsely we may be accused, that's another thing, but we shouldn't do something where we are actually deviating from the religious principles. Otherwise, how can we direct the common man to follow these principles if we don't follow them ourselves? Of course, a devotee being in devotional service sometimes can stretch, could find a way of reason for stretching some of these principles. In a sense. Because the principle of devotional service is even higher than these principles. Just like when Krishna told Yudhisthira to lie, or he just told him, you say that Aswatthama is dead. Yudhisthira hesitated because he said, there's Aswatthama, he's not dead. Aswatthama was dead, Aswatthama the elephant was dead. And Krishna, he didn't have faith. This little bit doubt was there when Krishna said, you just yell out, Aswatthama is dead. Knowing it would crush Dronacharya's heart, and then he would have Arjuna take the finishing, or would have the special strike against Dronacharya. But Yudhisthira hesitated. Because Yudhisthira was known as Satyavak, he never told a lie. If anyone else said that Aswatthama is dead, then Dronacharya would think they're just lying. But if Yudhisthira said, then he would think it must be true. But Yudhisthira himself hesitated. How can I tell a lie? I never told a lie. So by hesitating to carry out Krishna's order, he had to go to hell for a short time. Then Krishna told him, you sell loudly, Aswatthama, softly, the elephant, is dead. So you're not telling a lie. So you see the principle of carrying out Krishna's direct order is higher, but sometimes devotees, they think that whatever I want to do for devotional service is Krishna's direct order. Therefore, I'm above all laws and everything. But this is dangerous when we're preaching in society. Unless one does have a direct order from Guru or Krishna, we shouldn't ourselves become proud. I am a devotee, whatever I do is right, and then we do something which is wrong. We should be very careful to act only on the instruction of higher authority. This way we're safe. How to bring these people to the point of following these principles? If we tell people immediately you give 50% of your income, they say, wow, watch out for this Hare Krishna movement, they want all our money. If we tell people that just become a member of Krishna conscious movement and you'll have to give up all intoxication, all meat eating, all gambling, all illicit sex, people get frightened. Run. These people want to take away all the happiness of life. There's nothing left. Actually, when this was told to one English gentleman, he said, if we have to give up these things, we might as well die. In the Bhakti Siddhanta sent one, Saraswati Thakur sent one preacher. If we have to give up these things, there's nothing else left. This is life. They couldn't imagine how you can live without these things.